This morning, we're going to talk about the Christian woman. And I want you to think about as we go through this, our lesson today, and think about really a celebration of womanhood, more so than just motherhood. But think about, if someone says to you, there is a Christian woman, or she is a fine Christian woman, what image comes to your mind? You probably have a thought that, or an image that comes to mind when someone says that. Hopefully, as we go through our lesson, you'll think more about that, at what a Christian woman should be about and is about, and the type of example they set for each one of us. I'd like to read you a quote. This is in the beginning of a chapter on a book by Gary Smalley. If you're familiar with his work, he writes a lot about parenting and marriage and relationships. And listen to what he starts this chapter with. He says, because of an age-long training in human relations, for that really is what feminine intuition really is, women have a special contribution to make to any group enterprise. And I feel it is up to them to contribute the kinds of awareness that relatively few men have incorporated. What he goes on to talk about is that women are special in relationships, and that they can judge relationships and bring relationships to do better than, in general, men can. And we'll go through that, and we'll look at the scriptures that really support that very idea of the companionship and the fellowship that come through womanhood or through the women. Now, as we go through this, we'll see that the roles within the family of God for women and men are slightly different. Doesn't mean one or better, or it's just slightly different. In Galatians chapter 3, I want you to look at the equality of men and women within the Lord's family. It says, for you are all sons of God. This is Galatians 3:26. You are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For all who are baptized into Christ have clothed yourself with Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. So even though we may have different roles within the family, doesn't mean that any are superior or less than the others. And we'll take a look at that more as we go through. And as we go through the next few weeks, hopefully we'll be talking about the roles of men and the roles within marriage. And we'll see that how God has ordained these things. It doesn't mean one are better than the other. Roles are simply different from one to another. Today we're going to look at three different examples of what we might think of as womanhood. And the first one we're going to look at is Sarah, who was the wife of Abraham. Now if you remember the example of Sarah, she was a wife for many, many years, but she wasn't a mother until very late in her life. So most of her life she lived as a woman and as a wife, but not as a mother. Look over to 1 Peter chapter 3. And I want you to look at what Peter says. He starts off first with wives, but then he goes down to a more general idea of really of all women. And listen to what he says in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, through braided hair or the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Instead, it should be that inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women in the past, who put their hope in God, used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Now I want you to think with me. It describes women as having the beauty of inner self, or really the beauty of character. In many ways, that's what we'll be looking at today, is that inner beauty of character. Not the outward beauty, the outward adornment, and that's going to be said many times in scriptures, how quickly that might pass away. But the inner character, the inner self, does not. And that's where the beauty should lie. Now, we mentioned Sarah. There's two passages in the Old Testament that talk about Sarah, actually what she does, more so than just who she was. If you look over to Genesis chapter 16, We see one of the great ideas from Sarah and her example that she sets to us. Now, we must remember their culture was slightly different, but I think you can see the submission and the idea of servanthood that you see and companionship that you see with Sarah. In chapter 16 of Genesis, beginning in verse 1, now we're going to read Sarai and Abram because their names have not been changed to Sarah and Abraham as God does later on. Now, Sarai and Abram was Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Now, of course, this culture is different from our culture, but you start to see the submission of Sarah to Abraham. And not only the submission, but the willing to humble herself to him, to do whatever it took to be the kind of companion that she needed to be for him. Now, there is no way in marriage that the male or the female is superior to the other. But their roles are different. We've read Galatians chapter 3, 26, where Paul says there's neither male nor female. Look over to 1 Corinthians 7. And look at 1 Corinthians 7. Paul pretty well equalizes in the marriage. We'll look at different roles, as I say, later on when we look at marriage. But look over 1 Corinthians in chapter 7. Listen what Paul says in the marriage about the male and the female. And you think about what is your most precious possession you have. Where's your own self? Is it your own body? And listen what Paul says in chapter 7, verse 3. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife. Here he's talking about the sexual relations in marriage. And likewise, the wife to her husband. The wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but also to his wife. You see, it's exactly the same one to the other. Look over to chapter 11 of Corinthians. In chapter 11, verse 11 and 12. In the Lord, however, the woman is not independent of man, nor is the man independent of the woman. For as a woman came from man, so also man was born of woman. But everything comes from God. Here again, we see the equality. But the example we have of Sarah and Abraham, we see her submission to him and the way that she's willing to sacrifice for her husband. Now look over in Genesis, a few chapters over. With Hagar and Sarah, if you go through the whole story, there is a lot of conflict that comes about. You see, things don't work quite the way Sarah thinks that they may work. But in chapter 21, we see another Sarah celebrating with God. And listen to what is said here in chapter 21, verse 6. This is after, of course, the birth of Isaac, her son, when was born to Sarah when she was a very old woman. Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, has brought me joy. And everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who shall said of Abraham and Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. Now when you think about marriage, you think about what is presented to us in the Bible with marriage. Not marriage, but with womanhood and with a wife. Why did God create women? Now, I've seen lots of little cartoons about different things on that. But if you go back and think about in Genesis, why did God create women to begin with? Look over to Genesis chapter 2 and look at the beginning in verse 19. And you see the Bible example or explanation given to us for mankind and for womanhood. And look back to chapter 2 and verse 19. Now the Lord had formed out of the ground all the beasts of the field and all the birds of the air, and he brought them to the man to see if he could name them. And whatever the man named each living creature, that was his name. So the man gave names to all the livestock, birds in the air, and beasts of the field. But for Adam, no suitable helper or companion was found. Now this is on the sixth day of creation, and whether or not it was a single day or a long period of time, as I believe it implies, it goes through that God brought all the animals to Adam, and however long it took him, he named them all.
But the biggest point that he's making is when they came before him, they all had a male and female. They had a companion. But there was no one for Adam. That's the point that Genesis is making. When Adam is standing there, he's alone. He doesn't have a helper at his side. So God created woman not just to have children, not just to actually complete a family, but to be a companion to Adam. And that's the idea of womanhood, is really companionship. And through that companionship, fellowship. Not just in the family, but in the family of God and through all her relationships. She brings fellowship and companionship, really, to mankind. Look over in chapter 3, after Adam and Eve sin, and God curses them. Listen to what he says to the woman in chapter 3 and verse 16. He says, I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing, and with pain you will give birth to children. Your desire will be through your husband, and he will rule over you. Now, the rule over we'll look at later on with marriage and the leadership role of the man. But the idea that women will find fulfillment in their husbands or in their relationships, in their companionships with others, is where they will find their success and will find their fulfillment in life. And that's the idea that we see today. If you take a look at Sarah and you think about her life, and you can see how she was submissive to her husband, how she did sacrifice for him, and you get the idea sometimes, well, if a woman's supposed to be a servant like this, then does that lower her self-esteem or lower who she is? Actually, it's exactly the opposite. Because in womanhood, we get to see really what Christian or hood or what a Christian life really is all about. Because that's the example that Jesus set for each one of us. Look over to Matthew chapter 20. We look at the woman and her role, and you see how similar it is to the very role that Jesus took for himself. Look at Matthew chapter 20 and beginning in 25. The background for this is very worldly, so to speak. James and John have come to Jesus, and they want to be very top when the church comes. They want to have those roles of importance in the church, like many of us like to have from time to time, and like to rule over each other or to have authority over each other. And listen to what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 20, beginning in verse 25. Jesus called them together, and he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles, or the rulers of the world, lord it over them, and with high and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Notice the example that Jesus, just as the Son of Man, just as Jesus did not come to be served, but to serve, and give his life as a ransom for many. So in the very attributes of womanhood, we see what it means to be a Christian, taking on the very role that Jesus took for himself. Look over to 1 Thessalonians, and we see another example of womanhood that's given to us by Paul. And here, Paul actually places this to himself. And so it's an example that we get from women, but it's the example that we need to each one try to fulfill in our lives, whether we're a man or a woman. In 1 Thessalonians, Paul had been at the church of Thessalonica only a short time, and the Jews had forced him to leave. He writes this letter to strengthen this. This is a young church, and it's being bombarded with the Jews and others persecuting this church. And so Paul writes this as a letter of encouragement to strengthen them, and listen what he says about himself. In chapter 2, beginning in verse 6, or the middle of verse 6. As apostles of Christ, we could have been a burden to you, but we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her children. Now, what's the example that he gives? Think about the picture of a mother. Actually, the words could be of a newborn baby, as a mother holding her newborn and taking care of it. And you can see the love there. And he says, that's the way we dealt with you as a church. In other words, this example of womanhood, or actually here motherhood, is the way that we need to treat one another, the way Paul did. And in the same way, we need to emulate that in our lives. Now, the next example I'd like to bring with you is the one we started with this morning. It's from Proverbs. And if you turn over to Proverbs, it's a little lengthy reading. But I'd like to read through it with you, and you can sort of get the flavors we go through this of really what womanhood needs to be about in each of our lives and what we need to see from that. Look over to Proverbs 31. I'm going to read verses 10 through 31. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks for nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with her eager hands. She is like a merchant ship, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still dark, and she provides food for her family, portions for the servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for the task. She sees her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds this staff and grasps a spindle with the fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes a covering for her bed, and she clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed in strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household, and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned. Let her works bring her praise at the city gate. Now this is a picture, and if you look through this, it really does paint a picture of a woman that works hard. She gets up before it's light, and she doesn't quit till after it's dark. She takes care of her family and her husband. And notice how she's a companion, taking care of all the things that she could. She's truly the helpmate that's given to us in Genesis. Not only that, she brings honor and respect to her husband. Probably the most important item of any relationship is honoring that other person. If a woman dishonors her husband, it brings dishonor to herself and to her marriage and tears up that relationship. But if the woman honors and respects her husband, it brings honor and respect to him and to her and in the entire relationship. So you think if you go through this, you see how she honors her husband. And by honoring her husband, she brings him honor from those outside, and it brings herself honor and respect. So in all of our relationships, there's probably not one word that we could talk about more than the idea of honor. You also see she's generous to others, taking care of the poor. And she, in her planning and her hard work, she's able to, whatever the future brings, she doesn't have to have any fear for that. She's ready for it. And through all of this, you see the blessings that she brings on all of those around her. And that's the idea of companionship and really fellowship that women bring to the Lord's church. In many ways, you can say that they're the very heart of the church, because they bring that fellowship and closeness and warmth that each of us need, that's only brought by the nurturing aspect of really womanhood within the church. Notice verse 30 again. It really goes back and it echoes what Peter said to us earlier. If you remember, Peter says the women weren't made beautiful by what they wore, but by their inner character. Listen what the writer of Proverbs says. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but the woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned. Let her works bring her praise at the city gate. Look over to Acts chapter 9, and we'll look at the final example today of a woman that was praised by her works. She's a woman, we don't know if she was a wife or a mother, but we see her womanhood shine forth as talked about in Proverbs. Look over to Acts chapter 9. And here we have Peter. And this is directly after Jesus has gone back. The early church is growing there in Jerusalem. And in Acts chapter 9, beginning in verse 36, In Joppa, there was a disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas, who was always doing good and helping the poor. About the time, she became sick and died, and her body was washed and placed in an upstairs room. Lydda was near Joppa, so when the disciples heard that Peter was in Lydda, they sent two men to him and urged him, "Please come at once." When Peter went with them, he arrived and was taken upstairs to the room. All the widows stood around crying and showing him the robes and the other clothing Dorcas had made while she was still with them. Why was this woman beautiful? Because she never quit, it says, doing good. And even after she died, they showed the good works that they gave her praise. We know, if we read on, of course, Peter gave her back her life. But if we look at womanhood, we see the nurturing aspects within the congregation. Now, it's true that all of us have this responsibility. But I think if you go through the scriptures and take a look at the special role that women play within our congregation, they are the ones that really bring the companionship and the relationships within the church together. And that nurturing aspect is a special role that they play. Similar, this is the companionship. They truly are the companions within any group. And within the group, they are the ones that really hold that group together. Servanthood. You read through Proverbs and you see the idea of servanthood. And is it not what Jesus said? That even the Son of Man came to serve, not to be served? Women show us the way. They really set the example of what being a Christian should be. And last, the harmony. We started off reading from 1 Peter. And he says, the harmony of the quiet and gentle spirit. Now you think about a quiet, gentle spirit. That's what brings all of us together. And that's why, in many ways, we can think of the women of the church as really being the heart of the church. And so this day, let's really celebrate womanhood. And think about how glad we are that so many thousands of years ago, God created Eve to go be a companion to Adam. First, none of us would be here if he hadn't. But by doing that, he completed the set to make male and female, to make that companionship, and to bring us really into a family, even here today, the family of God. Today, if you're not part of the family of God, why not be a part? Be baptized into Christ and put him on so that you can be part of his body, his family. If you've wandered away from that family, why not come back to it today? If you have need to come in any way, won't you come as together we stand and sing.